my guest this morning is Jim Page, the Seattle-based legendary singer-songwriter. Jim, thanks so much for being here in the studio and letting me interview you.
My pleasure to be here. I have to tell you, KBOO is one of my favorite radio stations of all of them that I've ever been to.
So you are down here for the 30th Annual Winter Folk Festival, which is a fundraiser for Sisters of the Road Cafe.
Right.
Unfortunately, we're going to be airing the interview after the event, but it's a fabulous lineup, and so we're really hoping that folks will mark their calendar for next year. Your songs have earned praise from the likes of Winona LaDuke, Bonnie Raitt, Utah Phillips, Christy Moore, the Irish singer-songwriter, and you've had plenty of opportunities to really go after commercial success if that had been your main love in life, which it clearly hasn't been. And instead, you've had a life that's been lived pretty close to your roots as a street musician, as a busker.
Well, I don't know how to say this, close to my roots. I don't know. There's a reality that happens between the song, the person doing the song, and the person listening to the song. And you can get distracted by taking those elements out of the immediacy where they are real. You know, and there's all kinds of ways to sing. You can sing in concert halls and clubs, and you can make records and all that stuff. And I've done all those things, and I do all those things again. But I don't play on the street a lot, but when I do, I think of it as like my laboratory. There's songs that I've written that the idea, not only the idea, but the attitude of them occurred to me while I was on the street. Because it's like, okay, here I am, and there's that person over there. How am I going to say something that makes sense to that person's immediate condition right now? And a word or a phrase pops into my head. Now, if I hadn't been there, that wouldn't have happened. I mean, maybe it would have a roundabout and slowly or something, but in my experience, it's very valuable. It's really valuable. There's a few places that I still do it. I tend to sit down these days when I used to be that I would stand up all the time to do that, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I want to talk some about your impact on the Northwest street musician scene because it's really been profound, and I don't think all our listeners are aware of it. But I just want to say, first of all, that your songs engage a really broad range of really urgent social issues. Homelessness, poverty, gentrification, which is obviously a huge issue in Seattle and Portland both. Militarism and wars from World War II to Vietnam, Central America, to the Middle East. You've written songs about extraction, deforestation, racism, police violence. I mean, I don't know if there's a really pressing social issue that you haven't engaged through music.
Well, the music does that. I mean, there's a lot of people doing that. I don't know. I hear people say, whatever happened to, you know, they say protest music. We all know what that means, okay? It's a silly word, but we know what it means. And people say, whatever happened to protest music? It's all over the place. Beyonce does it. It's all over the place. I mean, everybody does it. It's not hidden. It's not something that nobody's doing. It's just that when you use those words, everybody thinks of one person with a guitar. Well, that's a formula. That's a genre, let's say. It's not a content. There's two kinds of songs, basically. One is the song that addresses the human condition, the social condition. And then there's the song that, you know, is written for the marketplace. They're not the same. Sometimes they cross over, but, you know, if we're talking intents and purposes, they're not the same song. So my love has always been for the song that resonates, that makes a person feel right, that elevates myself, elevates them, elevates the situation. That's what's always felt right to me. That's what I'm attracted to. My first exposure to what a song could do was Lightnin' Hopkins, who was a great Texas blues singer. Lightnin', I don't think, ever learned to read or write. I don't think so. I don't know about that, but I don't think so. He spent time in the chain gangs. He came from a very tiny town that's about as big as this room in Texas called Centerville. But if you watch him, there's some YouTubes out there that you can go and you can watch this guy do what he did. He was a communicator in the classic sense. He would take his little town, his upbringing, his personhood, and show it to you in a way that made it okay for you to see. You know, it's brilliant. It was really brilliant what he did. It was amazing what one person with a guitar could do. There's a really good one where he's, you know, he's a black man from Centerville, Texas, a small town, and this little video he's singing to, I think it's like three white kids. They're like 10 years old or something like that, or eight, something like that. And he's got his harmonica player with him, you know, and he's playing, and he's talking about, he's telling the story about a little boy who had a stutter, uncontrollable stutter, but he discovered that if he sang, it went away. Okay? And he was homeless, and he got taken in by this guy named Mr. Charlie, who owned a rolling mill. And Mr. Charlie said, you can stay in that shack right out there, okay, as long as you want. As long as I'm alive, you got a home. The only thing I want is if anything happens to my rolling mill, if it catches on fire, you run and tell me, okay? So sure enough, the rolling mill catches on fire, and the little boy runs, but he can't tell Mr. Charlie that the mill's on fire because he's stuttering so bad. So Charlie says, don't talk, sing, and then the song comes out. And you see these kids watching them, and it's like, oh, my God, they're entranced by what this guy does. That's what you can do with a song. You can cross generations. You can cross cultures. You can cross geography. You can cross class. You can cross all those divides with a song. That's why they're so great. And since I'm only one person and I can't do everything, I find the thing that works for me, and that's what I do. And a song for me, I don't know how to explain it. There's no way to explain it. It's just a good song. I mean, there's good love songs. There's good comedy songs. It's a good one. I don't know how to explain it. But it doesn't stop there. It's like it's the whole sphere of our human experience, right? Which includes homelessness, which includes police shootings, which includes the environment, which includes the guy in the White House, all that kind of stuff. All those things, we have the right to sing about them, and as an artist, I will go ahead and stick my neck out and say we have the obligation to sing about them. That's what I say.
So I kind of want to double back a little bit to 1974, right, which was the year that you were singing on a Seattle right. street corner, and you got approached by the cops, and yeah. that kind of became a moment that was pivotal for the Seattle music scene.
Say that word again, pivotal?
Pivotal.
Oh, I like pivotal better. It was out in front of Oliver's Meats, which is a butcher shop on Lower Pike Street between 1st and 2nd. And the motorcycle cop came up and he asked me for my permit, and I said, I don't have one. I just straightened right up, and I told him proudly, I don't have one. And he said, then I'll arrest you the next time I see you. And I said, well, I'll go get one. He says, you can't because you're not blind, and drove off. And I thought, what in the hell? So I packed up my guitar real fast, and I ran. I didn't walk. I ran down to City Hall, which is about 6 blocks away, something like that. And I went inside, and I started asking questions. I don't remember who I asked, but I found out that, yes, it is illegal to sing on the streets of Seattle. It was illegal without a permit, and the only permits available were for so-called blind and disabled people. So it was catch-22. You had to have one, but I couldn't get one. You know, so it was weird. So, you know, to begin with, I was like, I was crestfallen to begin with. And then I thought, no, this is going to be, this would be a project. Let's see if I can do something with this. Because another thing is that songs, if you do a little busking, okay, remember, just because you play in the street doesn't mean you have to stay there. Just because you play in the concert hall doesn't mean you have to stay there. Okay, you don't have to stay anywhere. And that was what I did. That was how much fun I had. You could play in the city council chambers. I played in the city council chambers. I played in the bus stations. I walked into the TV station one day and said, I got a song that you should put on the news. And they said, well, go play it for so-and-so. And I went and played it for so-and-so, and he put me on the news. You go anywhere, okay? So I thought, well, this would be kind of fun to see if I can bring my songs and what I do into city government. And let's see if we can change. So, you know, I had a guy that sponsored me. I had friends in the media already. I went and talked to them. Seattle PI just went and found somebody. He was interested. His name is Rick Anderson. He's still a writer, but he's, you know, freelance. Dean Patton wrote for the University of Washington Daily. I had friends in the TV stations, radio stations. We set up a city council meeting. And then I made up little flyers that said, Jim Page, City Council Chambers, 2:30 in the afternoon, Wednesday. You know, and I put them around town, all the places I played. I was playing on the university campus in those days, drawing pretty good-sized crowds, so I put them around there. So I treated it like a gig, you know, and the council chambers filled up, which is not an easy thing to do at 2:30 in the afternoon on a Wednesday. But they did. They filled up with all these, you know, weird-looking people with weird hair and clothes and stuff to come down there. And it was a trip, and it was really easy. It was really easy. They passed it. I don't think it would be that easy nowadays, but I could be wrong.
And you sang your testimony.
Yeah, I wrote a song for it called Now's the Time for Talking, because it was 1974 and that was Watergate. And Watergate was happening because people were lying and they were breaking into each other's offices and so on and so on. And my theory was, And it's not a theory, it's true, actually, is that what you don't need less talk, you need more. We need to go out and talk in public. And busking is like being the town crier in a way. You go out, you sing in public. Singing is like talking. Talking is like crying. Busking is like being the town crier. You go out and you sing in public. And if you don't have a song written for what just happened this morning, you make it up. You make it up. You use three chords, one, four, five, just like a blues played in the key of C. And you sing it or you talk it, but you do it right now. You don't have to write these things down. And you just go do that. And that's what I did. I did it for like 6 years or something. 7 years, 8 years in Seattle, you know.
Man, it was another 20 years before busking was decriminalized in Portland.
Oh.
So that Seattle move, you know, had a huge impact ultimately on Portland, but it took a while for that impact, I think, to hit.
Well, they're all different. The situations are all different. Every city has a different history, different set of laws, you know. And, you know, and then you have a different population. You got to get people engaged and interested and go do it. And once you do it, it's like you take over the streets. You know, whose streets? Our streets. You go sing on those streets that are our streets, you know, and there's your public voice. I mean, you had to write this book and you had to find a publisher. I could write a song and go out and play it right now. Right now.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I didn't have to write it. I could just go out and sing right now. Could do that. And that was the beauty, is the beauty of the immediacy of what it is. You know, there's any. You can go out there and do anything. You can do country western covers. You can do Rolling Stones songs. Doesn't matter. Whatever you want. But you can also do your own experience. You can also jump in there and be a town crier. And it's scary, but it's very rewarding. It's very fun and very rewarding. Rewarding. Rewording. I'm rewording the rewarding so it comes out right.
Yeah, so I know also that you spent a lot of time in and around Seattle's houseless community,
yeah.
That you've spent a lot of time in the tent cities, that you've written about houselessness and gentrification and poverty. It seems like those songs really come out of a pretty intimate witness for the kind of struggles that people are undergoing.
Yeah, well, I've been a renter for a long time. And being a renter, especially at my income level, is always like 1 week away from, 1 month away from being homeless. I was homeless years ago in New York City. It was in the summertime and I was young, so it was gnarly, but it was not terminal or anything like that. So I have a little bit of personal experience. But other than that, I know that my job is not only to write songs and to sing them, but to go find them. And to find them, you go where those songs are, where they live, which is in the people. So you walk around town, ride your bicycle, take the car, whatever, and you see tents in every open, vacant lot and people living in doorways. Like, what is this? You know, what's going on? Go find out. Go find out. Go down to the offices of the local homeless paper. Go talk to somebody selling the homeless news. Go. Don't just go walk into a tent city like you own the place because that's their home. But, you know, there are ways to do it. Should I play a song?
Yeah, absolutely.
I went to Nicholsville.
Which is one of Seattle's tent cities.
Yeah. Nicholsville started in... let me think now. I think 2008. It was on disused land belonging to the county. Because that way the city couldn't shut them down, right? At least that was the theory. Friends of mine, Anita Freeman, Joe Martin, Tim Harris, they were all involved in it. Anita was really involved in it. And they had all these pink tents. They were donated by the Girl Scouts. There you go. Set up all the tents and they built wooden sidewalks. And they called themselves Nicholsville after the mayor, Greg Nichols, at the time. The idea was that he was responsible, or at least he was overseeing, while the economic crash happened that displaced all those people. And I think it was Anitra's idea that this would give him the opportunity, since it was named after him, to be the first mayor in the country to welcome organized homeless people. Well, it existed there for a while and then it got evicted. Me and Joe went out there and sang for a while people took their tents down and stuff. It sounds kind of awkward, but people liked it and they enjoyed it. Then it had to move around, and during the winter, 2009 maybe, It was in the back of a church at the University District. It was really cold. Everything was frozen. And I went there to just meet people and say hello, and I wrote this song. Too cold for rainbows, too cold for sun, too cold for downpours, but we gonna get one. You better run for cover, rally around that flag. Ain't got a raincoat, I got a plastic bag. Come sit down by the fire, it'll do some good. Gonna keep it going long as we got firewood. Too cold to sit down, too cold to stand, too cold to say hello, but I can shake your hand. This is where we live now, so come on in, long as you ain't looking for trouble. You're welcome, friend, pull a sleeping bag over, batten it down, try to keep it level so we don't roll out on the ground. Living in America, in Tin City. 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 And it's just trickling down. Too cold to be living in tents, too cold to camp. Try to stay dry, everything gets damp. Too cold to be living outdoors, yeah, but you can tell that to the cops. Ain't got no other place to go, and the weather won't stop. Take a letter to the mayor, deliver it for me. Tell her we'd all like to see her down here, keeping good company. Too cold, but what you gonna do? Gotta live somewhere, and you know it's true. I can't pay the mortgage, I can't afford the rent. After food and bus fare, my money's just about all spent. Take a message to the man, whisper it in his ear. Tell him until we see some changes, we're gonna stay right here. Living in America, in Tin City in Sacramento. Living in America, in Tin City in Dignity Village. Living in America, in Tin City in Nicholsville. Living in America, in Tin City all over the place.
Been listening to the first in a two-part interview with legendary Northwest singer-songwriter Jim Page. Special thanks to Mike Buckman for his help with this segment. You can show your support for Portland's houseless community by calling the mayor's office and telling them to stop the sweeps and recognize and support the city's newest tent city, Village of Hope in Northeast Portland. The number for the mayor's office is 503-823-4120. This has been Desiree Helligers for the Old Mill Variety Hour.